Good morning, everyone. This is Karen Medina reading the Vermilion County Commercial News for Monday, July 25th, 2016. The first article that I'm reading is actually from Sunday, the 24th. Local Actors Create Theater Company by Larry Smith. Dateline Danville. Add the Dark Horse Theater Company to the local roster of theatrical groups. In its first production, August, Osage County, will be performed August 25th through the 28th in Bremer Theater on the campus of Danville Area Community College. Joel Shoemaker is the director. The founding members were all in a show together, said Jennifer Lee, one of those founding members. We were talking among ourselves, and someone said, why not do our own company so we can do the shows we want to do? Dark Horse joins Red Mask Players, Lincoln Park Theater Company, and DLO Musical Theater. Lee is its president, with Barbara Whaling serving as vice president. Other board members include Lisa Richter, Deb Hale, Paul Strain, Jean Dunn, and Breely Arford. It's not that hard to start a group, Lee said. We're finding you need to be really organized, but all of us being in different groups helps. We do what we know works. Dark Horse will not be a traditional theater company. Directors will set their own rules for the most part, even pre-casting a show without auditions. Directors also will set all the rehearsal dates. There will be no membership, and the group's season will have 3 to 5 shows. Lee said the organizers of Dark Horse hope to do modern shows, plays with more adult themes, plays that have become movies, and plays and musicals that have received Tony Awards, and more offbeat shows in the vein of Rocky Horror Picture Show, Lee said. She thinks Dark Horse's first production serves as an example. Lee describes the Tony-winning August Osage County as a dark comedy. There are really tense moments, she said, where you can't believe you're laughing. It's really an adult show, Arfer said. There's nothing else like it around. The shows require more than just a script and a cast. The group has a fundraising site, GoFundMe.com/Dark Horse Theater Co. And theater is with T-R-E instead of T-E-R, to help offset costs of royalties and other expenses. Finding time to devote to theater is the hardest thing, Lee said. I'm passionate about theater. This is a show I've wanted to do for 2 years, but I've always been involved with other groups, and there were family obligations and work obligations. There's always been something. Finally, just decided to do the show. Lee has performed in a number of local productions, but she's serving as producer for August Osage County. She already plans to direct the company's second show, Doubt, a Parable, scheduled for winter of 2017. Arford has performed as well, but prefers to work backstage. I just love theater, she said. I love being on stage, but I love backstage, too. It's great to see it all come together. Dark Horse organizers hope their efforts become successful enough to allow them to donate to other local organizations. Part of the proceeds from August, which includes topics such as addiction, will go to Soul Garden, a local group that helps those recovering from addictions. It says additions. It might be addictions. Everything has been really positive, Lee said. I think there's room for us. If you go, August Osage County will be performed by the Dark Horse Theater Company at 7 p.m. August 26th through 27th and 2 p.m. August 28th in Bremer, B-R-E-M-E-R, 1-M, Theater on the campus of Danville Area Community College. Tickets go on sale Monday. Check the group's Facebook page for more information. Committee considers increasing ambulance licenses. This is Dateline the 23rd, which would have been Saturday, by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. The Danville City Council's Public Services Committee Wednesday night will consider changes to Chapter 111 of the City Code pertaining to ambulances, including increasing ambulance service license to 2 in the city. According to Mayor Scott Eisenhower, there has been interest from a second ambulance provider who didn't want to compete with Medics, but now that Arrow has bought them out, the additional provider would like to have an opportunity to apply. Eisenhower also states, if the city had 2 ambulance service providers, we would split the city down Vermilion Street, with one service providing service west and the other east, and then the next month they would switch. It was announced through a Carl press release in June that Danville's Medics ambulance is scheduled to join Arrow Ambulance through an asset purchase agreement this summer, bringing the family-owned and operated service to the Carl Health System. Medics is M-E-D-I-X, is scheduled to join Arrow on August 1st, pending approvals. Arrow joined Carl in 1987. Eisenhower said Carl will have to submit an application to provide ambulance service here, just like Medics did. City regulations had provided for only one license, but the ordinance states the regulations should be updated and include providing for two licenses to allow for competition and increase service to the community. Also, as part of services requirements, zones are being added. For purposes of the operation of ambulance services within the corporate limits of the city shall be broken in two zones. Zone 1 shall be the area west of Vermilion Street. Zone 2 shall be the area east of Vermilion Street. Each ambulance service licensed pursuant to this chapter shall operate, including calls for emergency services, for alternating one-month periods in each of zones described. Also, as part of the city County Public Safety Building Committee meeting on Wednesday, Bob Scott, former Danville Public Works Service and Operations Manager, is expected to be introduced as the new Public Building Commission Executive Director. According to Eisenhower, the position is part-time and Scott was hired through a temp company. Scott will be paid an hourly rate. There is nothing prohibiting Scott from receiving his pension and working for a temp agency or as a contracted employee, Eisenhower stated. Scott retired under the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund early retirement incentive offered by the city. Also, at the PBSB meeting, city and county officials are going to talk about purchasing processes in the future. Eisenhower said the process has been too cumbersome and leads to tipping our hands as to what we expect the project to cost for the PSB. That needs to change, he said. Coming up, the City County Public Safety Committee will meet at 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building, 17 West Main Street. The Danville City Council's Public Service Committee will meet at 6:30 p.m. following PSB committee meeting. Also from July 23rd, police hears positive feedback on curfew changes by Brendan Dennison. Since the city of Danville rolled back curfew hours last month, police have certainly been out and about. According to records assessed at the public safety building, at least 13 curfew incidents were reported since June 13th in Vermilion County when the new ordinance took effect. Talk to Danville Police Criminal Investigation Commander Jane McFadden, and she'll mention, "My dad used to say nothing good happens after midnight." Although McFadden said that she has been seeing them more and more, overall she thought that kids are pretty much obeying the curfew and it's been working out very well. She also said that she thinks during the school year the situation takes care of itself. "I think it's more needed in the summer because kids don't have that structure that they have during the school year," McFadden said. Another point she brought up was some people have used the curfew to their advantage. "I think we help the parents a little bit in the fact that we set parameters," McFadden said. She also said that she would like to see it become permanent, but that decision comes down to the city council. "Anything that keeps kids safer is a good thing," McFadden said. She said they worry about kids being out late playing Pokemon Go, not necessarily doing something bad, mischievous, or criminal, and they worry about kids who may be abducted or beat up. "It's more for their safety than it is for us to control people," McFadden said. She also said they'll make exceptions for kids on their way back from work or a religious or school event. "We're going to see they're in the McDonald's uniform, Burger King uniform, or Walmart smock, and we'll send them on their way," McFadden said. "There are always exceptions because the police have discretions." July 24, 2016. Digging into the past, students find treasures at Kennecott site by Mary Wyckoff. There is an image of an archaeological site with shovels and people standing inside and tarps and other things in a book. Commercial News' Aaron Betson Benson left, and A.J. Gonzalez, field assistants, work at the Collins Archaeological Complex at Kennecott County Park. Students from the University of Illinois and Parkland College in Champaign recently completed a dig at the site. For more photos of their work, see the gallery at www.commercial-news.com. Dateline Danville. The little pieces make up the bigger picture, a sliver of bone, a fragment of ceramic, a bit of charcoal. A casual observer wouldn't notice anything unusual about those items in the dirt. Students and researchers working at Kennecott County Park are thrilled whenever they come across such artifacts. They know those little pieces will fall into place, giving a glimpse into life more than 1,000 years ago. Students and field assistants from Parkland College and the University of Illinois have spent the last 6 weeks working at the Collins Archaeological Complex under the direction of archaeologist Amanda Butler. The Collins site mounds are located along the Middle Fork River and were home to the Native Americans from 1080 to 1180. The earthen platform mounds had tops and slanted slides, and there's evidence of a hearth. There is a very rich archaeological area, Butler said, referring to Vermilion County. Based on the artifacts unearthed, Butler believes this was a special site where the people entertained visitors and conducted ceremonies, perhaps based on phases of the moon, and then threw the debris into a garbage pile. The people feasted on deer cooked over a fire and discarded the bones, of which the students are finding small pieces. The different colors of the earth show evidence of fire. The soil, for example, turns red when something is burned in the ground. The students have been digging trench units, the deepest is 3 feet, to examine where the buildings might have been. They studied the color of the soil for clues, with the light, dark, and red telling stories. There is a distinct difference in the color of the soil where a post might have been, for example. Butler, instructor at Parkland College's Department of Social Sciences and Human Services, believes that Collins plays a part in the larger puzzle of the Cahokia culture. She's interested in how Collins relates to the Cahokia Mounds State Historical Site, a 2,000-acre complex of mounds where a pre-Columbian city thrived near present-day East St. Louis from 1050 to 13 AD. Collins' site is a smaller window of the Cahokia timetable, but still significant in its own right. The Kickapoo and the Potawatomi groups didn't arrive until the 1700s. Butler also is interested in prehistoric religion and understanding how quickly the Cahokia region spread through missionaries to the woodlands people in East Central Illinois. Archaeological work was done at the Collins site in the 1970s, but it was done quickly due to fear that the site would be flooded as part of a reservoir project, which never happened. Some of those artifacts are displayed at the Kennecott, and others are curated and protected with the Illinois State Archaeological Survey. In 2013, the State Archaeological Survey and the University of Illinois partnered to rehabilitate and reconstruct the mounds. Butler's research is based on work at the Collins site, and she expects to bring in another field school next summer. However, after that, she said, there is no need to disturb it any further. She might begin to do research about where Native Americans lived in the area during that time frame, getting their hands dirty. On a recent day, the 8 students, 2 assistants, and visitors were busy removing tarps from the ditches and then beginning their calculations. Butler likes to recruit students from various disciplines such as religion and history, and not just anthropology and archaeology. Butler and the students appreciated having an important field school just 40 miles away from Parkland, which is unheard of, she said. It's rare to get this kind of opportunity to drive back and forth and sleep in our own beds. An archaeological trip to Belize by University of Illinois students might cost $8,000, but the Parkland group spent only $20 for buckets. What's amazing is that there's a huge civilization in our backyard, she said, but it's not being taught in schools. The group worked from about 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., but also had some fun. On Fridays, they would go to the Little Nugget and discuss their week. During the day, however, they didn't mind getting sweaty and dirty. Glenda Wold, a Parkland Pathways student, was sifting dirt through a screen, hoping to find artifacts. It's important to stop and sift periodically, she said, adding, you don't want to dig too deep and miss a feature. She was finding feasting rubbish, such as deer bones, in the dirt, as well as charcoal and quartz. It's interesting to see the different types of soil, she said. Butler said it's good for the students to have the sensory experience of working in the field. They use their senses to see how the colors change and their hands to feel for objects. They're learning things they're not going to learn in a book, Butler said. It's a great experience. Students find that it's hard work, but definitely worth it, she added. Butler appreciates all the help that Kennecott workers have given her. Jamie Pasquale, director of operations, said that the park opened a trail near the canoe access ramp a couple of years ago so Butler and others could work at the site. This year, the workers reopened that road and put in temporary culverts. The field study ended Friday, and students were expected to fill in the trenches with dirt, returning it to its original state as much as possible. The Collins site, which is protected by the state and the county, was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1979. FYI, a couple of students have written a blog at http://www.parkland.edu. We'll now go on to the obituaries. And this is kind of weird because it says Richard Llewellyn, but then it says Raymond A. Llewellyn. I'm not sure which it is. Raymond A. Llewellyn, 53, of Danville, passed away at 9 a.m. Thursday, July 21st, 2016, in the comforts of his own home. Raymond was the captain at the public safety building in Danville. He worked there for over 30 years and was due to retire in January of 2018. Raymond was born August 22nd, 1962, and was raised in the Danville area. He attended Oakwood High School and later went to DAC and received his associate's degree in accounting. Visitation will be 2 to 5 p.m. Tuesday, July 26th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. A celebration of his life will be at 5 p.m. following the visitation. Memorials can be made in his name to the American Cancer Society. Please join Raymond and his family sharing photos and memories at his tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Aubrey Scott. Aubrey Grace Scott passed away at Riley's Children's Hospital in Indianapolis at 5:30 a.m. EDT, July 22, 2016. Aubrey was born July 7, 2016. That's not true. Oh, yes, it is. Along with her brother at Union Hospital, she was the daughter of Joy Scott and Chelsea Martin. Surviving Aubrey are her parents, twin brother, and Aubrey was met in heaven by her great-grandpa, Terry Winslow, Sr. A private family service will be held with Sunset Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, Georgetown, in charge of arrangements. Marvin Sobotka. Marvin F. Sobotka, S-O-B-O-T-K-A, 88, of Newburgh, Indiana, passed away Friday, July 22, 2016, at his home. He was born March 4, 1928, in Inman, Nebraska, to the late Louis and Anna Meyer Sobotka. Marvin graduated with an accounting degree in 1950 from the University of Nebraska. He retired as comptroller from the Bungie Corporation of Danville, Illinois, after 40 years. After retirement, he moved to Mills Shoals, Illinois, and then moved to Boonville, Indiana, to be with his family. He served in the Air Force Reserves. He was a Boy Scout leader, Little League coach, very active in church, member of the Knights of Columbus and Quail Unlimited, and loved to hunt, fish, and travel. A mass of Christian burial will be at 10 a.m. EDT, Wednesday, July 27th, at St. Clement Catholic Church, 422 East Sycamore Street in Boonville, Indiana, officiated by Father Lowell Will, with burial at a later date in St. John Cemetery. There will be a meal and fellowship at St. Clement Social Hall at 11:30 following the service. Contributions can be made to the St. Clemens Building Fund, 422 East Sycamore, South Boonville, Indiana, 47601. I've got a few obituaries from the News Gazette. One from Potomac. John Osborne Sr. of Potomac. John L. Osborne Sr., 85, of Potomac, passed away at 12:27 a.m. Saturday, July 23, 2016, at the Veterans Affairs in Indiana Healthcare System in Danville. A celebration of John L. Osborne Sr.'s life will be held at noon Tuesday, July 26th at the Blurton Funeral Home, 400 North Vermilion Street, Potomac, with Pastor Adam Taubert officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Tuesday At the funeral home, memorials may be made at the Alzheimer's Association or the VA palliative care unit. The family has entrusted the Blurton Funeral Home to assist in the honoring of Mr. Osborne's life. Memories and other photos at the memorial page, blurtonfuneralhomes.com. Victor Wimsett III, Westville. Victor Wimsett III, 62, of Westville, died at 4:18 p.m. Thursday, July 21, 2016, at home. Cremation rites were accorded, and there will be no service. Rortveld Funeral Services Tilton was in charge of arrangements. All of the other obituaries were way before Thursday, so I'm going to stop with those and go back to the online. From the News Gazette for the 23rd, Monday, July 25th, Rediscover Danville. This is on page A9 of the print version. Rediscover Danville. Latos Hardware, 70 Years of Customer Service by Carol Nichols. What is the key to operating a successful business for 70 years? The Latos family will tell you it is enjoying what you do and adapting to what your customers want. Latos Hardware Store was the winner of a 2016 Illinois Small Business Development Center Legacy Small Business of the Year Award. Latos Hardware in Westville, Illinois, opened August 1, 1946. Tony Latos had worked in area hardware stores but wanted a business of his own. During World War II, Tony's uncle, Sam Latos, spent more than 3 years in a Japanese prison camp. On a visit home after he was released, he told his nephew he would use the back pay he'd accumulated to invest in his startup. Tony and his new bride, Molly, found the right location on Route 1 in Danville, downtown Westville, and built the main building that houses Latos Hardware today. The family lived in an apartment in the back of the store where they raised their son, Vic, and their daughter, Deanne. Molly, who passed away at the age of 102 just this past October, worked in the store until she was 96. She often told her children of a time when they were starting out. She had only the 50 cents in sales she had taken in that day to buy food for the family for the entire weekend, a feat she was able to accomplish with the help of local groceries generosity. With the exception of a short stretch as a lifeguard, Vic has worked in the store since he was old enough to dust shelves, taking time out to get his degree at the University of Illinois. Today, he handles much of the buying when he isn't on the floor answering questions and helping customers. Vic's wife, Judy, also works in the store. Deanne worked for a time as a secretary at Westville Schools, went back to school, finished her degree, and today handles bookkeeping and buying for the extensive household section of the store. She lives in the apartment above the store. Over the years, the Latos have participated in workshops offered by the Illinois SBDC and in classes at DAC. One of the store's two employees, Larry Delva, helps homeowners repair instead of replace by fixing screens, cutting pipes, replacing glass and windows, and sharpening knives and blades. Vic and Deanne can be found most days at the store. Vic's son, Chris, a chemical engineer, gave his dad and his aunt a gift certificate for 3 days off the last two Christmases, but they still haven't used up their gifts. Latos Hardware has remained successful by adapting to the needs of their customers and to the changes in the competitive environment. Big box stores have caused their inventory to change from appliances and lawn care equipment to specialty cooking equipment, kitchen gadgets, and high-quality Traeger wood pellet grills. A request from a customer led to a new line of beer and winemaking supplies. In spite of changes, the store still offers many of the same items Tony and Molly offered when they opened 70 years ago: nails by the pound, screws by the piece, and keys guaranteed to work in your door. Above all, they offer a friendly atmosphere where customers feel like one of the family. Stop in and wish everyone at Latos Hardware a happy 70th anniversary and rediscover Latos Hardware in Westville, Illinois. From Saturday, July 23rd, News Gazette, Man Instrumental in Many Area Farm Events Dies at 78 by Dave Hinton, Flatville. It was always about people. That's what made Darius Harms tick, whether it was evident from with his family, his faith, or farm life. Harms had a deep interest and love for his fellow man, according to some of those who knew the man who was big in the area farm community, including helping to start the mammoth Half Century of Progress Farm Show in Rantoul. It's continued on ASICS. Mr. Harms, who lived south of Flatville, died Thursday morning at Urbana's Presence Covenant Medical Center. He was 78. He had been in failing health in recent months, having spent time in the hospital and then recuperating in an area nursing home, but he got out in time to attend one of his favorite events, the annual Historic Farm Days in Penville, a show he was instrumental in planning the past several years. Rantoul Mayor Chuck Smith, who works with Mr. Harms in the village's hosting the Half Century Show, said Thursday was a difficult day for Smith after he heard Mr. Harms' death. Darius was a community leader who demonstrated strength, compassion, love, and a kind heart, Smith said. He worked hard to showcase the Half Century of Progress show in Rantoul. He said to me during the 2015 show, "I don't know how this event got this big, attended by estimated 100,000 people, but I'm glad it has." Russell Burr, BUHR, a fellow member of the I&I Antique Tractor and Gas Engine Club with Mr. Harms and many others, remember the kindness of the man. He'd give you the shirt off his back if somebody needed it, Burr said. He'd help a lot of young people, give them a job to get them started. There's a lot of guys who owe a lot to him. He was gentle, said Max Armstrong, well known in the farming community as a host of the Farm Show on WGN Radio Chicago and televisions This Week in Agribusiness, which is shown nationally. It was a privilege to be his friend. When I think of the people I met because of him, it's phenomenal. Hendrik Kirchhoffs, who, with his wife Anita, annually made the trip to the Historic Farm Days show across the Atlantic from their native Belgium, drove Mr. Harms around the Penfield showgrounds 2 weeks ago. In doing so, they were stopped many times by all the people that wanted to say hello and congratulate him on the great show. One woman said to me, "The show wouldn't be what it is now if it wasn't for Darius." But it wasn't all heart for Mr. Harms. He was strong-willed as well. John Fredrickson, former president of the I&I Club, said his friend was a hard worker. He was determined and he had a big heart. Determined is a word often used with Mr. Harms. Many times when people told him something couldn't be done, he insisted it could, sometimes to the consternation of those around him. Darius's approach was different than a lot of people, Fredrickson said. Many times he would not take no for an answer. If a job needed to get it done, he proceeded to get it done. He will be greatly missed by our club. Armstrong said Mr. Harms heard him discuss on the radio how he had obtained his father's farm mall tractor and urged him to attend the Penfield show, welcoming him with open arms. Mr. Harms also liked to tease. At a county fair in Tipton, Indiana, Mr. Harms loaned Armstrong a golf cart, which moved all of 15 feet before dying, all to the delight of Mr. Harms and friends around him. Armstrong thought the mishap was probably planned. They quickly got Mr. Armstrong another golf cart. He had a great sense of humor. He was not shy at all about nudging me about some mistake I'd made on air, Armstrong said. So the article continues on for several more paragraphs, including talking tractors, and he was P.T. Barnum. But we need to go ahead and finish today. Today is Monday, July 25th, 2016. I have been reading the Vermilion County Commercial News, and this has been Karen Medina. I hope you have an absolutely wonderful day. Keep cool. I think the rain may help. I hope you got some there in Danville. Have a wonderful day. Take care.